So hi everyone, welcome to our December Consultative Committee meeting. We're going to get going and I think we'll just start the roll call and then we'll jump foot first into our agenda for today.
Okay, I'll do that for you, Lori, since I have the list here.
Thank you.
So we have Sabir Syed from Peel Region. We have Badar Shaman from Brampton Board of Trade. John Davidson from Halton Region, Avery Campbell from ACTA, Stephen Tufts from the Brampton Mississauga District Labor Council. We have Trevor McPherson and Brad Butt from the Mississauga Board of Trade. We have Shane Raymond, he's the Toronto resident from the City of Toronto, and Daryl Shipp, the City of Mississauga representative. And that's our voting. Oh, and I just see Aileen Lucy has popped on as well. She's from representing the Toronto Board of Trade. And for the technical members, we have Walter Garrison from the City of Mississauga. We have Ludovic D'Souza and Amanda Chum from Transport Canada. Amanda is the new representative taking over from Ludovic, who is moving on to bigger and better things, I imagine. Daryl Van Morsel from the City of Brampton. And we have two people from MTO, it looks like. We have Alessandra. And we have, we did have a Margaret Tomei, but it looks like she's dropped off now.
Right.
I think she just had to step away for a couple minutes, but she'll rejoin.
Oh, okay. And what's her title?
She's the team lead over here.
Okay.
At the
Thank you.
Office. No
problem. Great. So we do have a couple of new members. Ludwig, I saw you jump on the screen. Do you want to share your news with everyone and introduce Amanda?
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it. Congrats on your acting, and I applaud you with all the initiatives at this difficult time that you have to go through with Omicron. Amongst us. So I know we're not going to stop hearing about this for a while, and I appreciate all the hardships that the airport's going to go through. I think, you know, as a partner with the Government of Canada and Transport Canada, we'll work to help whatever we can in our own way. And I want to introduce Amanda, who's now filling in behind me. I've been doing something at the side of my desk all these years, quite a few years, and that is reviewing proposals for transportation infrastructure funding. I'll be doing that on a full-time basis, this time with the National Trade Corridors Fund, quite a significant chunk of money for transportation infrastructure connectivity that we have in the future. So I'll have to abstain myself from such forums and maintain that impartial review and adjudication of proposals and recommendations to the minister. But I wish you all well. Amanda, you're in good hands with Amanda. She comes from the surface branch of policy, so she's been around transportation, knows the train side of things. So maybe that project to connect to Eglinton West, you've got a perfect combination, Amanda, with the air training I've provided to her, as well as the surface rail connection stuff. So all the best to all of you as a group. It's been a pleasure working with all of you. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Ludwig, and welcome, Amanda. We're happy to have you join the team and all the contributions I know that you'll provide. And Ludwig, you know, just when you get that big Christmas basket this year, don't think anything of it. It's just, you know, but, you know, we'll be working with you. And listen, you've been a tremendous asset and valuable member of the Consultative Committee, also member working with us through the Southern Ontario Airports Network and so many other initiatives that we work together on through Transport Canada. So I want to just thank you for the time that you've spent to bring your expertise and your knowledge and your support for us. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. And I might be signing off a bit earlier, but Amanda's wrong.
Okay.
Great.
I also wanted to make sure, Wendy, I think this is your first meeting with us as well.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure we introduced Wendy Parody, and Wendy's actually on our agenda today to give a presentation, but Wendy is the president of ACTA. So welcome. Thank you for joining us. We're glad to have you as part of the team. It has been a challenging time for aviation, and travel agents have been in the heart of it as well. And so look forward to your presentation today. I'll jump into the agenda now. We do have the agenda. So unless there's any changes to the agenda as presented, if I can have a motion to approve. I'm looking at, you know, this gets really tough on Teams. So I'm looking at Sabir, put his hand up, and I see you, John Davidson. Oh, okay. Badar as well. Okay, so I've got Sabir and Badar. Any opposition? Great. The agenda is approved for today. We also have our minutes from our September 14th meeting. Any amendments, additions, errors, omissions in the minutes as presented? All right, Brad, you're saying no. So can I have you move the minutes? Do we have a seconder? John, thank you. Any opposed? Seeing none, our minutes from September the 14th are approved. So in terms of matters arising from our previous minutes, Aylin, you gave us a fabulous presentation at our last meeting. So thank you very much for that. So your presentation has been shared with all committee members. And Jonathan as well shared out a link for us for the Agri-Food Forum that was hosted in York Region in early November. That was provided to all committee members as well. I think those are our items coming from the last meeting. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Michael Mendel, who's going to go through our update for Toronto Pearson regular agenda item for us.
Yeah, I hope most of you received the newsletter yesterday. If you haven't had a chance to look through it fully, our presentation overlaps with a lot of the material in the newsletter, so I won't go through it article by article, but it's worth looking at the newsletter story about Bombardier's new business jet facility being built in the north end of Pearson, and that'll keep 2,000 aerospace jobs in the GTA. So Bombardier's president, Mayor Crombie, and our president, CEO Deborah Flint, were on site at the facility in November to do a tour and talk about what it means for the aerospace industry. So worth reading that article. There's also links to interviews that our president and CEO Deborah Flint gave to the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail's Report on Business. So both are worth a read. They kind of give you an insight into Deborah's thinking about the economic importance of the aviation sector and Toronto Pearson's recovery. So if you remember, Deborah joined the GTA as president and CEO in February 2020, so right at the onset of the pandemic. And I'd also encourage you take a quick look at the, there's an article about Ontario's fall economic statement, which was released on November 4th. It includes a reference to the Eglinton Crosstown West extension and a commitment to connecting it to Toronto Pearson. And finally, there's an article about runway construction and our airside maintenance projects for 2022. And we anticipate big construction on runway 06 left and 24 right, which is about 60 years old and will have to be rehabilitated for safety reasons first and foremost. So as we know more about that major project, we'll be keeping community and residents up to date. So I'll leave it there for now.
Great. Thanks very much. Brad's asked a question. Yes, so he's asked a question about PILT, which is the payment in lieu of taxes. There's just quickly, five airports in the province of Ontario pay a payment in lieu of tax to their local host municipality based on a formula set by the province. Without getting too technical, the formula never contemplated a pandemic and the massive drop in traffic that airports faced as a result of a pandemic and as a result of the impact that would have on host municipalities and their revenues. So there is a change in the formula that was announced in the fall economic statement. Those regulations will be changed provincially. We think what's happened is going to provide for municipalities to recover PILT dollars as airports recover traffic in a more fair way than the formula previously would have contemplated. So I think the outcome of that is, you know, one of those, everyone got a little bit, and so everyone's a little bit happy, a little bit sad, but I think the outcome is probably a fair one, if you will. And so Brad, if you're looking for more detail than that, happy to take it offline. But just generally speaking, those regulations should get signed off, we expect, by the province in the next couple of weeks. Okay. I think our next bit then, if there's no questions about any of the content on the newsletter otherwise, Michael, I'm over to you for presentation.
Yep, absolutely. So I think
so Michael will you introduce Pat then?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'll introduce Pat. Thanks. So we're joined today by Pat Garisto, who's the Associate Director of Real Estate Development. And really excited actually that he's with us. He's going to talk about some of the real estate development opportunities. So that's in the back half of our deck. If Ingrid can, I don't know, Ingrid, if you can pull it up.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Awesome.
Can you see it?
Yeah, I can see it. Can everyone see it? Right. Okay.
Worked.
Maybe if we can go to the, we'll just fly through it. We can go to the next slide. Just want to talk off the top. We usually give an update on our quarterly results. So on November 10th, we released our third quarter results. And while we're starting to see signs of recovery, it's still a pretty dim financial picture. You can see the stats on this slide. Our third quarter revenues were still down 40% when compared with Q3 2019. We've taken on a staggering amount of debt to get through the pandemic, adding $784 million in debt through the last number of quarters, through about seven quarters. The last seven quarters are adding 12.5% to our overall debt. And I think the really compelling stat here is the, if you look at the daily cash burn and what it was pre-pandemic and what it is currently. So, you know, 1,000 a day in 2019 to 1.4 million in 2020, and currently sits around $600,000 a day. So very significant, and will impact recovery, no doubt. So if we can move to the next slide, please. I won't stay too long on this slide. If we continue with the Q3 results, you can see there are about 1.7 million passengers through the terminals, 190% increase year over year, which is good news, but still 42% down from where we were in Q3 2019. Next slide, please. If there's a bit of good news, I'd like to leave you with good news. It's at the airport. Our frontline workers have facilitated the movement of critical cargo and stabilized Canada's supply chain. And we're starting to see signs of recovery and a return to air travel, most notably during peak travel periods throughout the day. If you recall, you know, when this committee met a year or so ago, we were at our lowest point in our operations, about 98% down. And while signs of improvement are evident, 2021 overall continues to be a difficult year, and there's a long road ahead for recovery in the aviation sector. I think you're going to hear that echoed in Wendy's presentation as well. There's no question that a pivotal part of recovery will be reassuring folks that Toronto Pearson's a healthy and safe place to travel through and we're working with government to ensure they're ready if and when new variants of COVID-19 arise. So we move to the next slide, please. I think at our last meeting, I told the committee that in June 2021, we created a travel information hub. It's the landing page of torontopearson.com at the moment. Passengers, you can find information about wait times, COVID-19 testing, travel requirements, and the measures in place to ensure passenger and employee safety. So those include mandatory masks, limiting terminal access to only passengers and employees, and enhanced cleaning and air quality measures. So I think the value of a resource like that can't be overstated, particularly in the current environment, and considering how COVID variants will likely impact the travel ecosystem. So I encourage you to take a look at that resource or point anyone with any questions to torontopearson.com. Next slide, please. Of course, all of you will have seen that the federal government has recently announced mandatory arrivals testing for 100% of international travelers, with the exception of those travelers arriving from the U.S. So this is a federal government policy that they must administer. But given passenger forecasts and capacity constraints at the airport, we're talking with government about the necessity of combining on-site testing and off-site testing and using take-home kits or community-based testing to mitigate wait times for additional arrivals testing. So the Government of Canada's testing facilities at Toronto Pearson currently can process approximately 300 passengers an hour in T1, 250 passengers an hour in T3, and that's less than one Boeing 777 per hour per terminal. So based on current passenger forecast, the new arrivals testing could lead to more than 500,000 tests in the month of December alone. And you can imagine the congestion this would cause during busy holiday travel period and as air travel continues to recover. When there's congestion in the terminals, in the customs hall, when airplanes are being held at gates and in the sky, there are global, you know, there's implications for the global air ecosystem and our supply chain. If you think in Q3 of this year, 45% of the cargo traveling through Pearson arrived in the belly of passenger airplanes. So there are real-time implications, supply chain implications, when you think about what arrivals testing means for all international passengers. Can we move to the next slide, please? So as you'd expect, we're talking to every level of government about the measures needed to get Toronto Pearson back on solid financial footing and support the recovery of the travel and tourism sector. To be competitive, we have to minimize wait times and ensure our customs operations at Toronto Pearson are properly resourced to meet demand for travel and the systems necessary. I think we're all, if you have holiday travel plans, you're looking at how are your digital health credentials being presented and how are they seamlessly integrated into border and airline processes. So there's still a ways to go there, I would say. Just as we've seen in the United States, we're looking for our government to invest in airport infrastructure to support Canada's competitiveness, including border modernization, runway rehabilitation, COVID testing, and better regional transit connectivity to the airport. Now more than ever, I think it's fair to say we need to diversify our revenues at the airport, and we're working with government to facilitate non-aeronautical revenue opportunities. That includes arrivals duty-free, dual shop stores, retail cannabis as examples that would help meet the expectations of our passengers. We always hear from passengers that they expect to get to and through the airport quickly, and they expect to have the many concession options that are available at other international airports. So I'll leave it there. I'm really excited that we have Pat Garisto with us. I mentioned he's the Associate Director of Real Estate Development at the GTA, and he's going to talk you through some of the real estate development opportunities that we have ongoing.
Thanks, Michael. Welcome, Pat. And thank you. And thanks, everyone, for the opportunity today. So, Ingrid, if you can just go to the next slide, please. So if you could just click. You could click three times, actually. It's an interactive map. So just on the heels of Deborah's article in the Globe and Mail where she talked about three opportunities for development, we thought it would be a great idea for us to present to the group today just to give you some insights on those three parcels and some ideas of what we're thinking about, just as Michael said, to generate some non-aeronautical revenue, but also to support the region in its economic development program and employment. So what you see here is a general map of the airport. We break it out into three zones. One is our airside zone, which is red. It's about 2,953 acres. Then we have our terminal operations area, which is 589 acres. And then the blue is our commercial lands, which is about 1,071 acres. Next slide, please. So we have three zones, which Deborah touched on in the Globe and Mail presentation. It's the Boeing, which is the number one. That's 100 acres, and its use mainly is for hangars, cargo, and warehousing. The benefit to this site is it has both airside and non-airside access, so we can carve a piece out for commercial development, and that's what we're currently looking at doing. Number two is the South 409 lands, or Area 6A, and that's where our Viscount parking lot is, and that's the Viscount station, so the people mover that moves people from one terminal to the next, as well as our surface parking lot, is situated. And then number three is Area 2A, which is our Convair site. And that area has two separate parcels. And I'll go through each individually. Next slide, please. So this is just a development concept for Boeing, which we looked at and said, okay, can we still protect for long-term aviation growth? And can we carve out a small piece for local regional improvements? And we've decided that we can, with about 30 acres, go out with some warehousing and logistics or manufacturing and still maintain our growth on the air side. So that's what we've done here. So 30 to 33 acres will be put out to market, hopefully in 2022, for a commercial development, non-aviation related. And then numbers two and three will be preserved for long-term airport growth. Next slide. This is Area 2A. This is again on Convair, so Renforth and the 401 area. The GTA administration building is in this area. So we have two sites. We have Site 1 and Site 2. Site 1, we're going to preserve until the Eglinton Crosstown LRT is defined, as there's concepts that have the LRT bisecting this site and some that go around that site. So until that is defined, we won't be developing. But we will, and we have gone to market with number two, which is a small 2-acre site for warehousing and or logistics. Next slide, please. This just goes in depth for each of the sides. So the first parcel is a 15-acre site. Again, timing and use is impacted by the LRT. Next slide. And then this is the small 2-acre parcel that we went to market with. So we believe we can start generating some income for both the city from a property tax perspective, as well as a development for the GTA in 2022. This is the 6A site. It has two pieces of property, one on the north side of the APM rail lines, and then a second on the south side. So the bigger site, the 16-acre site, is the south, and the smaller is the north. If you want to hit the next slide. This is just a conceptual design that we've done back in 2016 that shows what the densification could potentially look like. Now, we know that things have changed. For example, this concept has a hotel with a conference center. The conference industry is being dramatically overhauled as a result of COVID, and we don't think that that still is a requirement. However, what we intend to do in 2022 is go back and do a refresh of this design and actually get input from various economic development people, such as yourselves, to help us influence what this concept could look like. So stay tuned. I think we will be reaching out probably Q3 of 2022 to have some discussions on what you think this area should look like or which it should encompass. Next slide. I think that's it. So thank you. Any questions?
I have a question, if you can take it from me at this time.
Yeah.
Mr. Penny, how are you? I'm sorry, I didn't introduce you at the beginning. I didn't realize you were on the line. Nice to see you. Go ahead.
It's okay. You own the properties under Airway Center Corporation and Malton Gateway, and you haven't included any of that in that discussion, and I'm wondering what's its disposition.
Thanks. So we haven't included it because we're not planning on making any changes to those sites. So those sites were purchased as office facilities, and they will continue to be used as office facilities. We don't see a change in that development.
Well, because I understood that there was some talk about selling some of that off. Is that
I think it's a great question. I think in the beginning of COVID and when we were going through what we were, we looked at every possibility. And yes, we've looked at what assets we should divest ourselves from. But at this point in time, we're not considering divesting ourselves of any of the assets.
Thanks, Pat. I'm not sure what order the hands went up. So the top of my screen is Stephen Tufts. So Stephen, I'll go to you next. And then Brad's hand is also up. So Brad, you'll be next.
Thank you very much. Just really two questions. First one is, how much of this divestment plan is actually driven by COVID and the extra debt that's been taken on by the airport? And the second question is, when it comes to the Viscount divestment, what are the implications for the long-term planning for the transit hub, which is supposed to go through that area? Is the transit hub now being all just being put on the back burner? It's not necessarily imagined, or how does this fit in?
I think I could answer both. So the divestment, we're not divesting. We're still just leasing those pieces of property to generate income. We had a plan back in 2008 where we started on this road of developing unused pieces of property. And you can see with what we did with Wayfair, for example, the car dealerships, the Dixie and the 401. And we're continuing to go through that that business model. We haven't wavered. We knew the timing of when we wanted to go with Boeing and with the both the Convair and the South 409 Lands or Area 2A site. So we are actually still in tune with what we originally anticipated from a timing perspective. The concepts, it was a concept that I showed you originally, was before the whole transit initiative was in place. We will look at transit initiatives as part of the next concept and iteration as well. So that's why I said originally we will be coming to you from an economic development perspective to get your input. In mind, we will keep other factors as it pertains to Eglinton, Crosstown, et cetera, in mind as well as we develop that site.
Great. Thanks, Pat. I think you make an important point just to reiterate is this is not divesting of lands. These are still federal lands that were simply under a ground lease, leasing and having developed. All right, Brad, you were next. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks, Pat, for that presentation. I know one of the criticisms that the airport gets is that, you know, there isn't enough property tax revenue coming out of the site. We've dealt with the PILT issue. I don't want to talk about that. These new commercial developments, once you find a tenant and you lease to them under whatever terms, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they will pay full commercial property taxes on their leased property to the various municipalities because it's not considered airport land or federally protected land, whatever term it is you want to use. Have you done any preliminary analysis to see if you were at ultimate development of these lands you've identified with commercial tenants on the site, what type of property tax revenue might be generated from the lands?
No, we haven't. And the reason being is so on that, all tenants pay property tax directly as they are fee simple owners of land. That's part of the Payment in Lieu of Tax Act. So all GTA tenants pay property tax. The reason why we can't do an analysis is we don't know what we're going to develop. So what happens is that once we go through a development cycle and we start building a property, MPAC, who's the assessor for property taxes based in Ontario, will actually come here. They'll do a cost analysis base as they would anywhere in Ontario to establish what the property value would be. And then they would just add the mill rate. So until we get a development design and concept, they can't assess what that cost recovery would be. So that's why we can't. I mean, we could do a general rule of thumb calculation based on densification, but it wouldn't be the exact number because just by the methodology MPAC uses to assess, and MPAC will assess. So we do this with all our properties, even on expansions. We will invite MPAC to come. They'll do a tour of the facility. We will give them the set of drawings. They'll do a cost analysis to add the value to the property.
But the bottom line is right now the municipalities are getting zero, and in the future they're going to get probably
correct.
Quite a bit.
Correct. Okay. Thank you. Because You're definitely right.
I hope the municipalities were listening to that. So thank you.
Yeah, and there's a few jobs that get generated as well as we create lands that are vacant now into employment and other uses. So good point, Brad. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Sabir, I think you're next. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Pat, excellent presentation, and I'm really pleased that you are developing this land and you have cargo logistic needs as well as needs for different type of jobs, because at Peel, we are promoting Peel Enterprise Zone, where we are saying that, yes, Peel is a logistics hub, but we also want to promote other type of jobs which are supporting jobs, such as the finance, IT related and other type of jobs. So I'm very pleased that you are developing this lands and also supporting, and you are not divesting the property. So that's excellent. The other thing I wanted to share was that at Peel, we do have a Peel Enterprise Zone where we have a vision that we want to make sure that people live and work in the same community. So I think this will also help the transit initiatives as well. And we want to provide different type of jobs to people. And I think air cargo and other type of jobs and this airport zone, which is the second largest employment center in entire Canada, I think this will definitely help. One of the suggestions that I would make is that you will take the needs of the air cargo into account and develop accordingly, because that will also minimize the number of trucks that will be on roads, and it will also help the air cargo industry, because the air cargo needs a different type of goods movement, which is a lighter goods movement, and helps various types of facilities. So I hope you will take that into consideration as well. And you will also undertake, sorry, last point, that you will also undertake the best practices review, because we have seen from your earlier presentations that there are other international airports which are doing very, very well. So we want to make sure that our Pearson International Airport is also the leading edge airport in terms of jobs, or in terms of transit and other types of modes as well. Thank you.
Thank you. You're spot on. I can't add to that.
Oh, and I was talking not on mute, so my apologies. Just was saying thank you. Some really great points there for Raven. I don't see any other hands up in the chat. Does anyone else have a question before we move on to our next item? Seeing none. Michael and Pat, thank you very much. We'll make sure that all the committee members get a copy of this presentation as well when the package is sent out. So we will do that. Our next item, I'm really pleased to be able to introduce Wendy Parody. So Wendy is the president of ACTA. And so not only is she joining our committee, Heather Craig Petey, I think we mentioned at our last meeting, has retired. Wendy, thank you so much. You're coming onto the committee and you're joining us to deliver a presentation as well. So appreciate your time and welcome to the committee, and over to you.
Thank you very much. All right, so glad to be here. And the theme for me today, did you want to bring up my slide presentation?
I certainly will. I was just going ask you if you wanted me to. Just a moment.
Okay. Perfect, thank you. So what I'm going to be talking about today is really the roadmap to recovery for the Canadian travel and tourism industry. Of course, my expertise is in travel agency services, but as Michael said earlier, we are an ecosystem, and the entire industry needs to work together for us all to be able to survive and recover from this pandemic. So ACTA is actually part of a few committees. One is the Canadian Travel and Tourism Roundtable, and that is a group predominantly association senior leaders, but there's myself, the Hotel Association, the Tourism Association, Airline Association, Airport Association, our three major airline government relations firms, as well as PR firms. So we actually get together as a steering committee once a week, and our goal is to actually focus on easing the Canadian border restrictions and travel advisories. So we work together and separate, advocating to the government about easing these travel restrictions in a safe and measured way. And then we also share information. Another group that we work with is called the Hardest Hit Coalition, and that coalition is all about aid and support. And really, it is predominantly small travel and tourism businesses. We do not have the airports as part of that coalition or the airlines. It's really travel agencies. More than 95% of us are small business, some hotels, which are for the most part are independently owned, live music, some of the smaller venues that have been pretty well shuttered from conventions or conferences for the last 19 months. So although we work independently as ACTA, lobbying on behalf of travel agencies and travel agents, in Canada, we have a very robust coalitions really trying to make a difference to really restart travel in a safe way. Next slide. One of our key messages to the federal government and the provincial governments is that they talk about recovery, and we need to make it really clear that our number one priority is survival. And so for us to be able to recover as an industry, especially those small to medium-sized businesses that I talked about, they are on the edge of bankruptcy after 19 months of close to zero revenue. So that's really one of our themes with the government, is that we are not in recovery mode. We are in survival mode. Next slide. Some good news is starting in about September, we actually saw an uptick in future bookings. So from travel agency services perspective, that was really into Q2 2022. So that would be the next spring and summer. So more interest in international travel, more interest in cruising. And but we did find that the fall was a little bit slow. And then, of course, a pickup in bookings for the holiday season over December. And then although bookings picked up for the winter, there are a few barriers that really impeded that bookings. So although we had some really good news and a good start in September, and then really after Thanksgiving, that ever since the stories and announcement about Omicron, that we have seen bookings, so new bookings, go almost to zero in the last week. So really, really difficult situation with the news coming out of, well, actually all over the world. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, that we've talked about how we need to survive before we can recover and thrive. Most of you on the call today will know that 2019 was one of the biggest booking periods of the history of travel and tourism, not only in Canada, but globally. And of course, we experienced 100% revenue drops when COVID hit. And so we are still in that survival mode. And for most of our industry, the number one priority, the number one advocacy priority of the associations is financial support to get us through to the other side of COVID. Next slide. So just to give you an idea of where things stand, I'll give you some travel agency stats. So 80% of travel agencies said that 2021, October 31st, year-to-date revenue remains more than 90% down over 2019. So in other words, there's been no significant revenue for close to 19 months. And the reason for that is how travel agencies get paid. And so, and this can, you know, be the same, let's say, for a hotel. So you may decide that you're going away on March break. You might book that trip now, but a travel agent or agency doesn't get paid until you actually travel. So that's why we keep telling the government we will have a lag in recovery because of how we get paid. 68% of travel agencies reported an improving outlook for the winter of 2022 compared to last year. So, of course, a big reason for that is vaccine rollout and adoption. Right now in travel agency services, 54% of employees are still furloughed. And with the new government program for the hardest hit tourism and hospitality businesses, which we're strongly advocating for right now to go through the House of Parliament, get passed by the Parliament, that that travel agencies said they'll be able to bring 57% of those furloughed employees back within 30 days of that bill passing. Next slide, please. I think important for our industry is that there are two types of businesses. One is that in travel agency services, 40% of our travel agents are sole proprietors, and they have been relying on the CRB financial support program, which ended in October. It ended for all employees as well who are furloughed. And then for travel agencies, hotels, event spaces, et cetera, that the wage subsidy, the rent subsidy, and the HASCAP loan programs have been lifelines to our industry, particularly the wage subsidy program. Next slide. So with Tuesday's announcement, when the federal government came out and announced new testing restrictions and all of the nervousness around the new variant, what we saw happen is that travelers really panicked. The industry really panicked with the news that was coming out around the world. And we had a lot of people calling, wanting to cancel their trip. Things have calmed down now in that we are finding the bookings are holding themselves. And so people are taking a wait and see attitude if they, in fact, are going to travel over the December holidays or into January 2021. So we're a little bit on pins and needles. But again, we were seeing some recovery. And now we've actually taken, I always say we take three steps forward and sometimes one step back. So we've, in the last week, we've really taken a step back. But at least people are not so panicked and they're actually waiting before they either decide to move forward with their travel or if in fact they're going to cancel. But last a week ago Tuesday, when the government made that announcement at 4 p.m., that there was a panic in the industry of people who were already booked. Next slide. So there are a number of barriers that impede travel. You'll remember last January that we all started off with the mandatory hotel stay, which was probably the number one barrier to travel. And then slowly over 2021, we saw some easing of these travel restrictions. And that's when, for instance, the removal of the global non-essential travel advisory, you'll see that in the bottom arrow in the center there. That's when we saw bookings really take off. So Canadians, for the most part, really do listen to the government and adhere to those travel advisories. And then, of course, more airports started opening up as well. Next slide. So for us to recover over time, so is the testing protocols in Canada. So the molecular test, the cost of the molecular test, you multiply that by a family of four, that we are finding that to be, that it is a tremendous barrier for us to really start to recover and see really a lot of international travel. The other impediment was the travel policies. So, of course, children that were unvaccinated coming back into Canada were really not able to go back into their childhood settings, childcare or schools. So, in effect, the family had a 14-day quarantine. So, that's something that really stifled the winter season bookings for family, was really the child policy that we had in Canada. Now that we're going to have more and more children have the ability to be vaccinated, we see that barrier easing over time. And then, of course, we still have a travel advisory from Global Affairs: avoid all cruises outside of Canada. So that, of course, is a crippling barrier for any kind of cruise travel. Next slide. So talking about what do we need so that this industry can really start recovering and not continue to do this start and stop. So we first of all need that financial support, and that the governments, they are recognizing that travel and tourism lag in recovery, and that continued financial support for the hardest hit travel, tourism and hospitality businesses is really vital for us to survive. Michael mentioned this earlier when he talked about the Healthy Airports Program. As an industry, we must really model the way, be leaders in adhering to protocols to mitigate the risk of the spread of COVID and ensure a safe experience as much as possible. That, you know, that means, like, for instance, in restaurants, that we are asking for the app. Same thing. We had a conference at a Toronto Airport Hotel last week. When you walked into the conference, there were two people who were asking to see everybody's passport. So I think that in those cleanliness protocols, it's so important for us to gain consumer and traveler confidence by really delivering on our promises here. I can't really overstate that. We are always stressing the Travel and Tourism Roundtable that our government, the travel measures that they put in place, they must be based on science versus politics. We also, and we actually have seen a change in the last, 6 months, although we have a long way to go, is that that the government, we're really asking for more positive communication when it comes to travel. So be more thoughtful in what you're saying, when you're saying it. And even though we have a real challenge with Omicron, that that the government has actually been quite measured in their response compared to how they were 6 months ago. So words are important. Canadians really listen to our government leaders. So, you know, having a measured and more positive communication around our industry, we see as vital. And then we see another, when it's time, that consumer incentive or travelers incentives in Canada to help restart travel will, and also send the message that, you know, it's time to come out of your house, start to move and enjoy those things that you really value again. So we know that Ontario has already introduced some incentives, and that that nationally we will be doing that as well, of course, centered on traveling within Canada. So those are really what we're looking at from ACTA and from our coalition partners in the industry.
Oh, what a great presentation, Wendy. Thank you so much. So many of the points that you make are ones that, you know, we have been working sort of hand in glove with. So the table that you mentioned in terms of travel and tourism, the Canadian Airports Council that we're a member of sits there. And so Daniel Beach and his colleagues participate there. A lot of the very similar messages, cleaning and hygiene and making sure we're doing and living those healthy airport protocols so that we're building that confidence back in travel, working aligned with governments as they bring in policies and hoping that we can have the rationale that they're based in science and get back to what we all love to do, which is travel, but recognize that we're still in the middle of a pandemic and that, there are needs for us on occasion. Like we have this 100% testing policy that was announced by the government. So we've been working to implement that policy. But as we do that, we continually speak to the need to support recovery in our sector. And this is quite an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I was struck by the number of people who are sole proprietors in your world and how challenging that must be when it's your own business, you're running out of your home or a small office and how this has been for them and their families. Mm-hmm. So it's been a challenging time, I'm sure. I'm going to open it up and see if any committee members have any questions for you. And I see Stephen Tufts has his hand up. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Wendy. That was very informative. Travel agencies and travel agents have had it rough over the last couple of decades, right, with technological change and prior to COVID. And then, of course, 50% shrinkage during the pandemic. I'm just wondering, when it comes to recovering or attracting people back to the sector from furlough, how many people or travel agents do you think have left permanently? And are they coming back? Because in other sectors with the pandemic, including some at the airport, folks exited the labor market, tourism and hospitality, and they're not coming back. They've gone into other sectors. So I'm wondering what that challenge, if that's a challenge that you're dealing with or anticipate. Thanks.
Yeah, very good point. And we will experience the same. So some of our larger travel agency members who actually support, so they would be more corporate travel, that they, of course, will support a business in travel, and they might be a global organization. So they've been calling their Canadian teams back because I'm going to just throw out the name IBM. So it might be that the Canadian team handles the IBM account globally. So they started bringing back travel agents. And to your point, that what they found is after being more than a year on furlough, that when they phone them up to say, okay, we're ready for you, that a good 50% chose that they had either retired early or they had left the industry for one of their, it seems in COVID there were have industry and have not industries. And so unfortunately in travel and tourism, we were devastated by COVID. So quite a number of our employees actually left and started working in some of these other industry that had labor shortage. One of the things that they tell us, some retired. I didn't, I wasn't going to retire for 5 years, but I'm out of here. So there's certainly that group. But for some of our younger employees, that they are really hesitating to come back into the travel industry. And so they're saying, I have a full-time job now. I am able to pay my mortgage. I can put food on the table. Maybe they're driving for Amazon, maybe they're working at Sobeys, whatever it is that they're doing, that that they don't want to give up that stability. And so I talked in my presentation about two steps forward, one step back, that there is a tremendous amount of concern that so many of us lost our jobs so quickly last March and April that I really can't afford to come back into the travel and tourism industry at this point in time. I'm still traumatized by what happened to me. And if you had other family members in travel and tourism, it was really tough. And so we actually hear people say, see you in 3 years, see you in 5 years. I'm not coming back now. And so the early indications that we're seeing, it's about 50% that are declining to return to the travel industry.
That's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions for Wendy? Great. We'll make sure that that presentation is shared with everyone on the committee, Wendy. And thank you so much for sharing that with us today. We're going to move into our roundtable with committee members. I'm going to go through the roll call list, and it's just a way to keep this organized. So, Sabir, you are first on the top of my list. So go ahead with any updates for the committee, please.
Thank you, Laurie. At the Region Appeal, we have been working on various studies right now. So we are planning to develop our long-range transportation master plan. Hopefully, we'll start that work in 2022. And we will be also working on the update of our goods movement strategic plan. Our current goods movement strategic plan is up to 2022. So we want to develop a new five-year strategic plan. And as a part of our goods movement, current goods movement strategic plan, we have been working on the off-peak delivery, e-commerce, and truck-friendly measures. So we'll continue to work on those projects, plus add new projects as well. And we are very pleased that the work with Smart Freight Center, which GTA is part of it, has worked very well. So we have now four universities, so University of Toronto, York, McMaster, and Ryerson University, a great partner for the Smart Freight Center. So if any of our members want to have a relationship or want to undertake projects, that would be an excellent way of getting involved with the goods movement sector. Plus, we also have a data management and warehouse that we will be developing as a part of a UFT project. So we'll be undertaking that data available to you as well. Thank you.
Great, thanks very much. Who is next? I think Badar had to sign off. I think I saw in the chat. So next would be, is Councillor Singh on the line? I didn't hear you call him in the roll call, Ingrid.
No, I don't believe he is.
Okay, so John Davidson from the Region of Fulton, please.
Thanks, Laurie, great to see you. I'll be brief, I think, just a couple of things. So we've got the GTAA doing their annual delegation to Halton Region on the 15th, so that's coming up very quickly. We'll also have our budget that day, which is has a 2% increase and not too much degree of controversy from what we can see, but we're into a budget workshop tomorrow. But looks like it's, for us, a pretty straightforward budget. A couple of major reports that are also going in the December timeframe. One is the an official plan amendment for the Milton Education Village, which is really the start for the Wilfrid Laurier and Conestoga College, which will be breaking ground in 2024. So they've got a really ambitious scheme, and that those will be the first buildings as they move towards a whole separate campus with a full build out of about 10,000 students over time. So that's really exciting. And we're also releasing on December 15th our new development charges, which is taking our growth out to, this is only to 2031. So per the province's growth plan, we'll be coming back with a new new DCs in about two and a half years or so, to take the growth out to 2051. So this is sort of the lesser of those at this point. But that's a project that has been taking a lot of time as well this this fall. So I think I'll leave it there. Thanks, Laurie.
Great, thanks. And we're looking forward to seeing you on the 15th for our update to council.
And the good thing is you're before our COVID-19 update from our medical officer of health. So you're on the right side of what will probably be an hour and a half at least of questions, and as COVID-19 continues on. So
yes,
look forward to seeing it.
Okay, well, I'm glad we're in front of that, not behind it.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks.
Next is Stephen Tufts. Any updates for the committee from you?
Yes, thanks, Laurie. I'll just quickly mention three things. First of all, is that the All Workers Council is taking part, and the ITF is actually doing some work on looking at healthy airports and their response to COVID-19, And the GTAA and Pearson is actually seen as one of the important cases in that work. Second is there are some issues that are arising over mandatory vaccination policy. The TAWC's position on the issue is we're not for or against mandatory vaccination. Of course, it's a combination of employer policy and federal regulation and mandates that is driving that. We do, however, feel that workers who choose not to be vaccinated should not use their job permanently, even if they are facing unpaid leave. And lastly, I'm happy to say that TAWC is undergoing some changes. We've lost some personnel due to retirements and early buyouts. And so we have gone through a period of recruitment and retraining, and I was very pleased to take place in a 3-day retreat that we held with about 40 stewards and rank and file activists at Port Elgin, which is sort of looking at the next generation of TAWC leaders. And I think the last issue, just relating to the point that I made with Wendy's presentation, is that we are in a period of pretty rapid callbacks in many sectors for folks who have been laid off. And in some, anecdotally, in some workplaces, we are actually hearing of people have left the sector permanently as well. In one case, an employer is actually trying to incentivize workers to recruit their siblings or relatives to come to work at the airport. Because they simply can't find people quick enough for the recall as travel resumes. So we're keeping an eye on that. Of course, the TAWC's position is the easiest way to recruit labor is to increase wages. And that's something that I think in the low wage sector of the airport, there's a little bit of work to be done, given that about 20% of Pearson's workforce works at around minimum wage. Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. I'd love to hear more about some of the outputs from your day-long workshop with 40 emerging leaders. It'd be great to
understand. Three days.
3 days. Yes. Toronto Airport Workers Council talked for 3 days. Oh, no. Yeah. And you didn't invite us. I'm sad. No, I'm in all seriousness, it would be great to connect and hear more about some of the outputs from that.
All right. Not a problem.
Next, Mississauga Board of Trade. I don't know if it's Trevor or Brad or each of you have updates to share.
Trevor might want to pipe in. I think it's his first meeting as our new CEO attending. So maybe Trevor wants to say a few words and introduce himself to the crew. And I can be quiet for once.
Trevor, my apologies. I was forgetting this was your first meeting. I should have properly introduced you at the beginning. So welcome.
Thank you.
Person is the again, you've been in the seat for a couple months now at the Mississauga Board of Trade. In fact, I was so happy to have my first in-person meeting be an event hosted by the board. So thank you very much and appreciate you coming today, and over to you.
Hey, thank you very much. And yeah, we were pleased to get back into our in-person events as well, and hopefully that just continues. We have more coming up, and yeah, we're crossing our fingers for good news. We're heading into some strategic planning for the organization, which will begin in earnest in early January and take us through March. And we'll be looking to do a number of consultations with various stakeholders, from members to community partners and other organizations that we work with. So that's a big focus for us. Our Mississauga Economic Recovery Group is also, steaming ahead, plowing ahead, and engages more than 50 CEOs of Mississauga employers across 8 sectors. So we're looking at sort of what that's going to look like going forward as well. But those are a couple of big items. I'll defer to Brad for some of the more policy specific pieces. But thank you for having me today.
I think the only thing I would mention that we've been working on is our Shop Local Mississauga program, which has been encouraging, obviously, residents to shop at business, shop, dine, and enjoy at businesses located in Mississauga. So that certainly would include Toronto Pearson Airport. So hopefully some people are taking it, whether they're traveling or not, maybe taking advantage of some of the opportunities there as well. But that's been a major focus for us this fall, as we're all getting through, or hopefully getting through, the worst part of the COVID-19 pandemic and seeing most of the economy reopened, although in some sectors there continue to be some capacity restrictions. And I think it was announced yesterday that those, or earlier today rather, that some of those are going to continue given this concern now about the Omicron variant, which may throw things a little bit into a tailspin. But let's hope it's considered to be under control and we don't have to go back to any of those very difficult measures that we've seen in the past. I mean, we're continuing to work, you know, very well with the City of Mississauga, Region Appeal, and provincial and federal governments on issues that affect the business community as the local Chamber of Commerce, and we'll certainly be continuing to do that very robustly in 2022.
Great, thanks so much. Maybe I'll just give a plug for you, for any members or non. I see that you've landed Scotty Greenwood to be the guest speaker at your annual meeting. Scotty is a former diplomat in the US, but she's also a consultant in Washington working on the Future Border Coalition. So it's an organization that the GTA is really active with. It's multimodal, binational. She's a terrific speaker, so well done to land her. And so just if anyone has time, I don't remember off the top the date that it's happening, but if anyone's able to join and hear more about Canada-US multimodal issues, Scotty, and you know, she's, as I say, she's pretty entertaining, so I'm sure she'll take any questions on the other issues around Canada-US relationships that anyone wants to throw at her.
Yeah, Scotty's great, and it's actually tomorrow morning, so if you want to register, you got to get on their site right now.
Okay, awesome. Sorry, I didn't realize it was already tomorrow. Alrighty then, who is next? Aileen, you are next. Toronto Board of Trade, Aileen, also from UPS. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurie, and I fully concur. Scotty's a great speaker, so I'm actually going to see if I can maybe join that. Thanks just to the presenters from earlier today. I found those presentations particularly insightful. In terms of the Toronto Board of Trade, three updates to share with you all. The first is that the board released a report called Next Stop, Building Universal Transit Access, which is the third proposal in a four-part series on building a globally competitive transit system. It covers service standards, infrastructure investments, and new technological approaches to making transit a more viable option for everybody. I can share a link to that report with you all if that's of interest. The second update is on the electrification symposium that the Toronto Board of Trade hosted. Oh, thank you, Aileen, for posting that there. So some of you might have had the opportunity to join this. Earlier in November, it was, the board held an electrification symposium, which was geared towards identifying challenges and solutions to facilitate the infrastructure that's needed to support zero emission vehicles. As a next step coming out of that symposium, the board will be releasing a roadmap of key recommendations for decision makers, which will be released in early 2022. And then the third update is, I believe that I mentioned this as a placeholder last time, but the Transportation Summit, so a reminder that it will be taking place on February 2nd. And for Toronto Board of Trade members, there will be an in-person portion of the summit. And the agenda is available now on the Toronto Board of Trade website. And that's it from me.
Excellent. Thanks for those updates. Some really interesting things on the transit file coming forward from the board, for sure. So we'll make sure to circulate. I didn't see what Aileen posted, but she posted that transit report. We'll make sure it gets out to everyone as well. Who do I have next? I don't know if Jonathan Weedle was able to join or not. I think we thought he was coming a bit late, but I don't see him here.
I don't see him either. I've been checking.
Okay, Shane, you just popped up on my screen and you are next on the list. So any updates, Shane, from you?
Thank you. Let me just plug in my proper speaker. Do you hear me okay?
Yeah, no problem at all.
Good. Okay. As a Toronto resident, the one thing I could add, I don't know if there's much that the committee can do, but I was on a flight entering Terminal 3 last Sunday. We landed and then had a 90-minute time period when we were stuck in our airplane because customs was too busy and they didn't have enough customs officials. That seems unavoidable, but it also seemed for some reason that as soon as we got to our gate and people were allowed to take off their seatbelts, they also thought they were allowed to take off their masks, which did not lead to a good situation. And I actually, I'm not normally like this, and I got in trouble with my son for it, but I spoke up. I said to them, like, the law is you got to keep masks on. Can you guys do something? And the flight attendant said, we'll make an announcement, but there's nothing we can do other than that. And again, I don't know if there's very much that the airport can do about it, but we want to try to promote a safe environment for everyone who's using the airport. And I kind of just, like, I mean, there's nothing I could do after that, but I do feel like wearing masks on airplanes has to be taken seriously at this time for people, not just for health, but for the confidence of our industry. And if there are people on this committee or people associated with the airport who could maybe try to express to airlines the importance of taking these regulations seriously, I think it really would not just benefit the health and safety of those flying, but the overall industry, where we have to ensure a safe environment for everybody and give people confidence in that. So I wish I could come with more of a solution other than I tried. And anything that anyone on this committee could do as a resident who uses the airport and cares about it very much, I would encourage us to try.
Yeah, you've raised two really important points. So the first is about resources and the challenges of making sure that we have the resources in place to process passengers. The building has not shrunk. Our passenger volumes continue to be down, well below 2019 levels. Yet the processing time for passengers, given the health requirements, is more onerous. And so that is a conversation that we continue to have with our colleagues and friends at Customs to ensure that we are well staffed, gearing up for the holiday season where more people will be visiting their friends and family members for the holidays. It is a message that we are delivering to government to say we need to ensure that every booth is staffed and that we, you know, put the best foot forward we can to try and make sure that people aren't doing exactly what you did, which is, you know, after a flight, then sitting at the gate waiting to get off the plane. So apologies for that. But thank you for raising it because it is an important issue that we continue to raise as well. And then I think the message around masks is one that Wendy delivered so clearly. I mean, you're right. It's about confidence. And ensuring that the public health and safety measures that we're taking to deliver services to the traveling public are preserved so that we can rebuild confidence in travel and wearing masks. So we do our own surveys of passengers. And so you're not alone. This is, you know, hygiene, cleaning, mask wearing, distancing. Those are all issues that do come up in our surveys that help people to feel safe in travel. Vaccination is probably the number one thing we hear. And so good news is that Canadians and Ontarians have, you know, for the most part, you know, been in line and had their second shots and are now probably many of us are eager to get our booster soon. But building that confidence back is critical to success of recovery. And so, you know, we do have measures in place. And I know the carriers do as well on aircraft, but in the terminal buildings because of the mask requirement. Is in the terminal space as well. And it's a requirement as soon as you set foot in the terminal buildings that you must have a mask on. So we do have enforcement and do our best to try and enforce it. I think you actually talked about masks at our last meeting as well. So you're just
the fact that we could have the policies, but I find it really is 98% of the people respect them. And then the 2% who don't, I almost feel do it deliberately to say, you're not going to tell me what to do. And that creates a bit of a dangerous environment. And I really think in some cases we can't control it. But when we're on an airplane, that airplane is in charge of our safety. And just like if a passenger was doing anything else that's unsafe to other passengers, they have to be proactive. They can't just make an announcement. And again, I don't know how much anyone here can do. And with your first point, I would add to everyone on this committee, if you don't already have a Nexus pass, get a Nexus pass. Because once I got off the plane, I just walked right to a customs agent. So, like, yeah, I don't understand why anyone wouldn't have a Nexus pass, but if I could add anything positive.
Just to remind you, as of December 1st, no one is getting on a plane in Canada unless they're fully vaccinated. So I think that's a good measure for us in terms of where our safety measures are as well. So thanks for that, Shane. Daryl was with us, but I think he signed off. He had to go a bit early. Savick, I think I saw you there. Seneca.
I'll unmute.
How are you? Nice to see you.
I'm very good. I want to thank Ingrid for waking me up from my deep slumber, getting me to attend today. We've been quite busy at the college. We've been going through a major change, but thank you. Welcome all. Those great presentations today. The number of tests that are ongoing and the logistics of getting those things are as well as the low volumes, it's good and bad, but with the Christmas rush, it'll be a good test for you guys to see how you can push through this. The college has been going through some major changes, our program. We've moved to the School of Business, all the aviation programs, the flight program, the two diploma, the flight services, and the operations safety program. And that's now under a new control of a new dean, a gentleman by the name of Jeff McCarthy, and a new interim chair, a person by the name of Sarah Ailis. And so they're basically reconfiguring and redesigning the entire aviation programs. So that's going to take some time. There's several job postings up for a new chair, a full-time chair. They're interim at this point. So as you can see, as you can imagine, while the upper echelons are doing all the things that they're doing, the core of the people that do the work every day is very strong and steady. The program enrollment is excellent. The recent grads we had last year are all picking up jobs now with the uptick in the industry, which we keep hearing all these different challenges, but I know several people with some of the new operators, and they are talking about the may not have enough seats for the March break rush that's going to come after Christmas, and hence a lot of them, like Jetlines and stuff like that, are actually pretty much going to be a good operation to start off their new business model. So. We're still teaching online for majority of our classes, and we will do that for the winter. Omicron has obviously made that a little bit of a concern, but generally we've got a really good a good base, and we continue to provide good support for the industry, and we'll continue to do so until we get past some of these challenges right now. And I don't know. I mean, everything says 2024. So or late 23. So we'll just grind through this process right now, and that's all I have today. But I want to thank everyone. It was really good presentations, and glad to be back in on the program.
Great, thanks, Savick. That's great news to hear about your programs being full. That graduating students are getting work. So that's really positive to hear. So hopefully that is definitely a brighter news than we were hearing a year ago. So hopefully this is new good news, more good news to come. I think that is the all of our committee members, voting members. Just want to turn it now to see if any updates from our technical members. Walter Garrison is here from City of Mississauga. Garrison, I'm sorry.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Lori. Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so thank you for the presentations today. It was certainly interesting. The Bombardier event was mentioned. That certainly was a very good event to attend. Business jets are definitely is a positive sign there. And in general, aerospace manufacturing volumes are starting to ramp up, which was really helpful for the local aerospace manufacturing supply chain. I attended Ontario Aerospace Council event last week, and three of the foremost aerospace consultants in the world spoke at that event. And one of the things they did discuss of interest to people here, I think, is business travel and how business travel has undergone a bit of systemic change and will continue to undergo systemic change. And they cited a Bloomberg survey of 45 large businesses. And what they're saying is, as far as B2B meetings, and I know because we were at Aeromar Montreal in Montreal late October, which was about 50% of its normal volume, but that was still a time where Omicron hadn't raised its ugly head as a variant. And so it allowed us to meet face-to-face with a number of different organizations. And so that was very good. And a lot of people that were there, they wanted to be there. And for some of the companies that I know attended, they found that event very good. So that type of business travel, I think, will continue. It's going to be very interesting to what happens with internal business travel with large corporations, whether they will continue to use the Zoom, MS Team, WebEx paradigm that we've been using over the last 20 months. And just the last thing I'll say is that there's going to be an Advanced Transportation Manufacturing Summit, Mississauga, in February of 2022. And that event will be focused on the aerospace as well as the automotive and the defense sectors. And that's for suppliers and buyers to meet together to have direct B2B meetings. That event will be hybrid. We're going to see what happens. So there's a lot of discussion today about future bookings, and this certainly impacts companies and organizations from other parts of the world coming to Toronto or in February. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. So we don't know as far as what numbers will be in person. As I said, it's a hybrid event, but we're anticipating 250 organizations, 500 people attending in some way, shape, or form with that event. So those are my updates.
Great, thanks, Walter. That's a big event you're planning. You said that's for February?
That's the first week in February, essentially. Yeah, it'll be at the International Center. Great. I can send you more information if you would like on that too.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. If you don't mind circulating that'd be great. Thank you. Next, Transport Canada. I don't know. I think Ludwig said he may have had to drop off. So, Amanda, any updates from Transport?
No updates, but I'm really happy to join in on this first call, and thank you for having me, and I'm happy to just continue to listen and share any other updates when they do come in, and looking to learn more from all of you.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm glad to have you here today. All right, next. Daryl's next, so I'm just going to NAV Canada, Dave Parco. Dave, are you still with us here? I don't know if I saw his name. Ministry of Transportation for Ontario. So, Alessandra.
Hi, everyone. Hello. So, no updates from us at this point, but I'd like to thank everyone for their presentations. They were super insightful. And as always, I hope everyone's doing well.
Great. Thank you so much. I think that brings us to the end, except for ours. So I just have a couple things, and maybe Michael has some things to mention as well. And I think my colleague Eileen Waiter's on here as well. Yeah, obviously we're working with the Government of Canada in terms of implementing 100% testing on arrival, as Michael mentioned in his presentation. There was a little bit of good news hearing coming out of the sort of science folks today about the O variant and its severity of illness and the vaccine's effectiveness. So hopefully that news will continue to get stronger and so we won't have the same concerns about this new variant. That will be good news. We do have a number of applications that the GTA has put in for funding from the Government of Canada related to infrastructure investments. And so we are kind of hopeful that some of those will be announced. I think some of you may have seen there was a number of announcements made nationally about investments being made in airports across the country leading into the federal election. And then, of course, things had to stop as a result of the election. So we are sort of keeping our fingers crossed that Pearson will be able to receive some funds associated with runway construction, the baggage project, some border modernization, as well as transit. Those are sort of our priority projects we've submitted applications for. We were busy last week with Pearson Partners Week, as we call it. And so there were a number of activities where we worked with our community relations team and being active with volunteerism, hearing some guest speakers, some internal events, but as well a speed mentoring event that we did with Women Through Our Access Employment Partnership. And so I know Eileen and I both had a chance to participate in that. And it was quite inspiring to hear the backgrounds from some of these newcomer women who've come to Canada and the skills that they bring to, for us to all. And it's quite the courage, I think, is probably the word I would like to use of people that come to this country, and some of the backgrounds are just so inspirational. So it was really, really, really great to be a part of something like that. Fulton. John Davidson. John mentioned the fact that we're in front of Fulton. Should also mention this is part of our rounds of updates that we do. So we've been in the last couple of months, Michael, to City of Toronto, York, Peel, Durham, and I think Colton is our last to round out the year. So we're looking forward to being there. Over to you, Michael. Those are the things. And I think the only other things mentioned as we listen to the updates is really watching supply chain issues as recovery happens and some of these workforce issues. Those are sort of some of the key markers around recovery. You know, this is sort of save for all of the protocols and measures in place to deal with the pandemic directly. Some of the things falling out of the pandemic that will have impacts on recovery that we're really keeping an eye on is, you know, some of those workforce issues as well as supply chain challenges.
Yeah, no, Lori, I think you covered all the meaty issues, I would call them, but just a couple housekeeping things. Just thinking about meetings, consultative committee meetings for 2022. So we'll send out dates in the new year, and just want to thank everyone for their participation. I think it's been a good year of meetings. It's the committee's as strong as its participants, so I think I really value everyone's contribution. I personally learned a lot, and just hope everyone has a happy holiday. I know we could all use a good holiday at this point.
Yeah, have a happy, safe holiday. Hope you get the chance to spend time with family and friends and people that matter in your life. Look forward to seeing you in the new year. And I suppose at some point we need to talk about whether or not we can start to have meetings in person next year. So maybe that's something on our agenda, Michael, and canvassing the committee and see how we want to manage that.
That's a great idea. And if anyone has any ideas for agenda items or just the way we go about these meetings, always happy to hear it. And feel free to reach out to me or Lori directly and happy to have that conversation. So.
Do you know what? Before we close off, I'm sorry, Mr. Batty, I did not go to you. I apologize. Are there any questions, comments you wanted to add from the public arena?
Oh, I thought you were going to punish me for jumping in on the meeting when probably I shouldn't have. Lori, I have a particular interest in your publications page, which is reports and publication. On that page, your five-year performance review is overdue, and I particularly look forward to reading that. As well, your ground lease. Your ground lease, Lori, is 10 years out of date on your website, and I have no doubt it is not 10 years out of date, in fact. So my particular interest is in Article 9, which you would know as the Public Accountability Principles for Canadian Airport Authorities. And that lays out some obligations that you have. And I think, to put it in the politest way, I think some of your folks have had have missed out on some of the things that I would suggest that they probably should be knowing. So if you could do that, I'd really appreciate it.
So on the first one, that should be coming in the next number of weeks. We've just completed the five-year performance review, so you should see that being posted on our website very soon. So there's the good news. And forgive me, but I'm not sure what I I understand when you say our ground lease is out of date.
Yes, it's an Amendment 14, which is 2010.
Okay, so.
And I know there's an Amendment 15. And
I see. Okay. All right. Gotcha. All right. So let me double check on that one because I'm not sure what's happened, but you're right. We should be maintaining most current versions of ground lease based on amendments that have been approved by transport. So leave that with us and we'll make sure to follow that up and report back to the committee and as well.
Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a happy holidays with your family and look forward to seeing you next year. All right, everyone. With that, can I have a motion to adjourn our meeting?
Motion.
Shane, thank you first. Second, I see another hand. Whose is that?
Sabir.
Thank you, Sabir. All right. I have no one, I'm sure, is going to oppose that. So happy holidays, everyone, and we'll see you in 2022.
Happy holidays. Thank you.